Cognitive Rampage Podcast. Oh, Steve is hard at work as usual. Without my Steve, but welcome if you're tuning in live. I'm double checking. We did some rearranging in the studio. As you can see, you're a little bit more closer, or you're a little closer to me. So sorry.
You out?
Okay. Huh? Oh yeah, we're good. Oh, that's my guest in studio and back on the Cognitive Rampage Podcast. Big Mike the Messenger Williams.
Hi, hello everybody. Welcome.
You should have seen yourself turn that on real quick. It was like there was
a lot to talk about, man. I've been holding a lot in today.
Oh,
I've been, you know how you like to keep us quiet for a while. You said, look, don't talk. Just wait till we get the podcast going. We're wasting stuff. So I'm like, all right, well, let me just hold it all in and just wait. So this is going to be good therapy for me for today because, man, I need it. It's been a long week.
That's funny you mentioned this is therapy, man. Sometimes that's how I see it, too. I do. You did good being quiet. We've been hanging out almost an hour or two, keeping it surface. So I'm interested, man. I wrote a lot on there about what you wanted to talk about from a estimation, but for the most part, you always end up revealing something about, you know, the kids, the school system, the teachers, what you're seeing, you know, what you're going through. And I try to keep it focused. I'll try to keep myself focused, really. And I'd like to hear one. I'd like to end with what you want to talk about with language learning or language styles, okay. Learning styles. Sorry. Right. And first, kind of talk about, you know, bring the listeners into the schools with you. What you're seeing, because I talked about, you know, you're working in some of the toughest schools here in Orange County.
Right.
You know, talking to those kids that are forgotten in this system. You know, maybe talk about what you're seeing. What's it really like in the school system? What do the kids have to reach to for help? That kind of thing, you know, to kind of bring them into your vision, you know, to how you see it. You know, you've spent two podcasts, still the number one downloaded podcast, I want to say is, I see it all the time. It's number, you've been on here twice, but the first one, okay. The second one's right up there too. It's in the top.
41 is 40S.
Yeah, 41. We're still calling it the sessions and stuff. Yeah. So, it was in the new year, the new transformation, but it was good and it's been killing it. So, I'd like people to kind of understand your perception, where you're coming from, because you are in the trenches, if you will,
right.
You know, up front, hands on, part of your principles too, that you talked about. We've covered a lot about your principles and some things that you, the ways that you approach things. And I'm sure we'll get to that in the end with the language styles, the learning styles, but you know, what are you seeing in the schools for one? And then I'm sure somewhere along the way there, that therapy session that you're requesting will probably magically just begin, man. So,
what should I start?
Yeah, that's on you, man. I mean, I kind of want to, you know, if a parent or a listener could be in your shoes and see what it's like really in the school system, you know, from an objective standpoint, because you're not a teacher, you don't work for the county, and you're not a student, obviously, you know, so you get to play that middle role in these schools. So that objective perception, I guess, is where to start, because a lot of listeners are parents. So myself, we come from a biased standpoint, and a lot are educators that listen as well. So you're that objective role. So I'd like listeners to understand your perception of what you see, so when they can connect the principles that you're talking about in the previous two episodes and probably here at the end.
It's a lot. It just really depends on how you want to break it down. Imagine this. Imagine a blind man, right? And this guy can't see anything, right? And you walk outside and you're trying to describe to him what you see. Do you just see a blue sky? Do you see just birds chirping? Do you see bugs on the floor? Do you see grass? Do you see a wooden fence? Do you see six houses? Do you see a house across across the street with a Mini Cooper in it that's red, and the house with the shutters? Like, do you see all these things? But it's so much that you can see. It'll take about 10 days to really break everything down to how everything merges into it. So it's not just the idea of what I see. Is you always got to look at where it comes from. So I see a lot. But it's not going to be on the idea of focusing on really what I see. It's really more about what's the solution, because the problems are already out there. And one of the biggest things that I pay attention to is the fact that a lot of kids walk around school with so much baggage, and they have emotional baggage that they're carrying that you can't see. It's invisible, but it's still baggage. And they're trying to find a way to bring, they're trying to find a way to take that load off their back, at least for the 8 hours that they're in school. So they have so much emotional baggage going on and so many things that they have to worry about, even before they focus on their schoolwork, getting kicked out of the house. And this is daily, you know. So one girl, I'm not going to use student names, but one girl, her mom kicked her out. This is her senior year. So her mom kicked her out, and you know, just said she didn't want to deal with her. Like, she's a senior, she's gonna be going to college soon, but for some reason, like, it's more of an issue with the parents, and it bothers me because parents don't know how to be parents. And if you start to pay attention to the fact that teachers have so much more to worry about because now they have to become parents, just on the idea of the role of a parent. You know, the role of a parent is to help develop the mind of their kid and mold the mind of their kid as far as good concepts and principles. And kids go into these schools and they don't know what a work ethic look like because their parents don't show them. Their parents don't condition these kids for school. So now the teachers are behind because they have to condition the kids for the school. And then not only that, but they have to teach them concepts and principles of what it is to be a great person. So now the burden for teachers is starting to get heavier, because the only way people can react to the teacher, the only way students react to the teachers now, the teachers actually become the mentors. Or, you know, like at Evans, they call me uncle. So, you know, I'm that guy that they know they can walk up to and say, hey, look, I need to talk. And parents aren't doing it because parents aren't talking to their kids. And the definition of parent is to bring forth. You know, if parents really knew that the generation suffers so much because think about the word generation, root word generate. If you have a generator, right? You have two generators merged together, and then they create a third generator, right? So it's just a generation. So it's energy that's not been transferred from the parent to the kid for the kid to progress and push forth to the next generation. So now you have weak generations being cascaded down as offspring from a weaker generation, into a weaker generation. So the parents just really aren't spending any time with their kids. They're not talking to their kids. They're not doing any of that. So kids are yearning for this, and they just want it from an adult. It doesn't even matter. So when I come in, I talk to the kids, it's really just, hey, can I talk to you for a second? Yeah, man, what's up? Let's talk. And it works. But they have so many personal problems going on because they're having to pay the debt for what their parents didn't pay. Or a lot of the problems that the parents have, like, what's a good one? Like, they don't have any emotional control. You know, they get around their parents, and their parents kind of shoot this game at them from the idea of, you know what, you ain't going to be this, and you ain't going to do that, and that. And they start yelling and screaming because they're so frustrated with the kid that they're not realizing that the way you treat your kid, you're conditioning your kid to be treated by the world like that.
Yeah, we talked yesterday. I used a phrase that you can use for multiple ways is, you know, see the child, see the parent. And so a lot of times that's true. You know, for me, even treating children when I was, working in practice clinically like that, it was difficult, you know, because I could bring the parents in, but I couldn't change the parents, the environment at the home. So, you know, so really what you're seeing, I love how when I asked you, what do you see from your perception? That's how I know it's so real from you, is you dive right into the kid's perception. And I love that. You left what you see out of it and went, you know, this is what the kids see. This is what they're going through. Then you went to, this is what the teachers see, right? You stuck with those perceptions of the others, right? I love that, man. That's being outside of yourself so much. And I love that, but I want to know, what do you see? What are your perceptions? If you had to cognitively rampage what you see, I know you see that that's the kids' perceptions, etc. I'm trying to pull that rant out of you is what I'm trying to do. Yeah. Is, you know, if you really had this, if I had to hand you the mic and you had to get on stage in front of parents, school board, the state, whatever, and say, you got, I don't know, 1 minute to say what needs to happen, you know, I think that may pull your perception out. Somewhere along those lines, what rant could I get you to come out? And not rant, because rant has a negative connotation, because it's something, you know, the reason I ask is because I'm not in the schools. I'm just a parent. So I'm in the schools as much as I can be for the most. Some parents are in, you know, a lot further, you know, they run deeper involved in schools and know a lot about what's going on in the environment. You know, you can see a lot of it. And I love that uncle perspective that you have. It so much shows that kids do need a lawyer. You know what I mean? They need that objective. It's not for you or against you, maybe even. So maybe a lawyer metaphor is bad, but you know, there used to be those school counselors that you could talk to, but for the most part, now they just book your classes for you and help you prepare for college as far as, you know, that's concerned, majors, qualifications, letters, etc. And the kid can't talk. And I have found, and I can only speak from my parental perception, that showing vulnerability, you know, to my daughter and being able to talk to her helps. It doesn't make everything work, but it helps, you know, and that open line of trying to keep an open line of communication, right? We can talk like, you know, it's always open, but let's face it, they don't bring you everything. You know, sometimes you got to cultivate that out of you. So I just kind of went off on a tangent there, man. I was covering everything that you kind of talked about, you know, that you're poking at. I love that part, but I still want to hear that 1 minute. If I handed you the mic, what needs that? What do you see?
Just care. Literally, just care. Kids don't feel hopeless, man. They just need somebody to care.
Yeah. I love it. And one, man, you're tearing up on them, dog. It's real. Man, you're getting all emotional on me too, man. That's powerful. Ooh. It's true. You know, it's in 1 minute, you know, you and I can talk for hours sometimes. And for 1 minute, you know, was too long to even need to explain what the kids need and what the people are lacking in the world, I guess, total. You know what I mean? And it's funny that I can hand you a stage and you could talk for days on any topic. And then to say, narrow you down to 1 minute. I thought the difficult part was going to be fitting everything you needed to say into 1 minute. And you drop it in one powerful word, man, as Mike the Messenger always does. You know, hence the name.
I mean, is this really just care?
Come back to you?
That's fine. Kids don't really care what you know until you show them how much you care. Just listen to them. That's the first part of everybody want to feel loved. Miss Bond. Oh boy. There's a kid in that class, in the freshman success class.
No name.
But in a freshman success class, made a 3.5 GPA this time. His first time in his whole entire life,
that's awesome.
His GPA, like his grades for this semester in the third quarter was a 3.5. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Never in his whole life has he ever made the honor roll. But he had one teacher that cared. He had one teacher that loved him. He had one teacher that would go back for him, be an advocate for him in some of his classes, make sure he got his schoolwork done. Even after school, this kid would show up to every tutoring session. And when she was whispering to other kids about a special one that she was going to have on a Saturday, he said he'll be there. She just showed him that he cared. That he cared. So once she showed him that she cared, now here you got this kid who everybody thought was just remedial and had issues in life. No, he just needed somebody who cared. And you get so many parents that just don't care. And, you know, in due fact, maybe it's by default. They just don't know how to care.
You know, that's a good point, the knowing how to care, because if it's passed down, like you were talking, from generation, you know, knowing how to care, how not to care, or show how to care even. That's a huge point, because a lot of the parents, you know, are raised under a different way, you know. And, yeah, and sometimes we think we're showing we care by doing what we believe. And sometimes we even say that we got to do the hard stuff, right, to show we care, which is true. But it can get confusing, you know, some of that part, right? That scream at be just like this, enforcing. It's hard not to enforce your own beliefs, right, onto your child. And I always try to remind myself that when I'm enforcing my own beliefs, in a way, I stunt the development, her own creativity, her own, you know, it's kind of that way. And I think kids, bring the point back around, especially in today's world, have a keen way, especially kids that have had it tough. Their survival mechanism increases and they find a way to sniff out bullshit. They can see it. You know, they can see that, who cares authentically and who doesn't. And I think parents many times forget that. They don't believe that the kid can see through that or see through the bullshit and really decipher between who cares and who doesn't, you know? And I've found that generally anytime I was doing a group, anyone that ever thought it was worth anything or tuned into it, I would always play it off like, I'm entertaining. And the truth is, I just cared, you know? They could tell. You know, so if I was doing a group therapy session with people being affected by addiction, I, you know, would really get intense and I'd get in there and not as a show, you know, and they could see that authenticity. And so, you know, you speak of the one teacher there that did that and those kids can sniff that out. And I think what I know of you is you're able to be authentic. You're able to come direct like that and be authentic with the kids and be something that I think a lot of them miss. Is that something to talk to objectively without fear of judgment, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just, you know, they just want somebody who they know that they can talk to who's going to give them a genuine answer, you know. Or in a lot of cases, I get in front of them and they just talk. And I just listen. I don't say anything because there's no need for me to speak. Sometimes they just want somebody to listen. And then I just listen to them. And then if they need the hug, I give them a hug. They'll cry. And then, you know, I'll help them. They already know the answer. They're like, so what do you think? Like, well, what do you feel like you deserve? Don't you feel like you're worth better than that? And, you know, you just, like, just ask them rhetorical questions. And they'll come up with an answer. And then, you know, just as long as you're genuine, as long as they see that you really care, and they know that you're going to give them the most sound answer, then it works, because, you know, then they'll come back to you and say, hey, listen, just wanted you to know what you did. Like, the conversation we had really meant a lot to me. And, you know, this is the decision that I made. And it doesn't matter if they make this decision that you helped them come up with or not. Whatever their solution is, just still be like, okay, so that's the solution? All right. Like, you're not mad? No, I still love you. You're not the decisions you make.
We, a lot of times I have found that asking the question helps better than, you know, preaching the perceived solution, because even if it's our idea of a solution, it's still perceived. And a lot of times the kid does want to be asked just straight up, you know, what do you think? How are you going to approach it? You know, and then maybe helping them walk through their plan further beyond step one and two, maybe, is where you provide that care or guidance, you know?
Yeah.
And I got to also speak for those teachers and counselors alike. It's really easy to be jaded in both sets, you know, whether you're working within hospitals or privately, et cetera, and working in teachers, you know, working public, private systems, et cetera, that it's hard to be it's hard not to be jaded, because you already said it. They're having to be mentor, parent, teacher, et cetera. And going through all of those growing pains within the classroom makes it difficult to learn anything. And so shout out to those teachers that strive through that and that have not become jaded yet and not let the system hold you down. See, that's what I'm going to get verklempt now, see? See, now you get me all verklempt when I think about, you know, shout out to Mike Rummel as being one of them. I know the things that go through the man's mind, you know, and where his heart lies. And that shout out goes to all those teachers that do push through and professors alike and parents, you know, that see the broken system but refuse to go quietly into the dark, you know, that still shine the light. So those do exist, and they're being weighed upon, you know. And I've heard you talk a lot about teachers, too, about caring for them, you know, on that angle. And trying to bring the care in for the kids, it just keeps going back. It seems so many people I talk to on this podcast, it keeps going back to this environmental idea of community care, you know, family care, world care, you know, a unity of love, if you will. It seems no matter what, whether it's a doctor in social science like Dr. Maroon or anyone else, it bridges somehow back to love, even if it's marijuana legalization. It circled back to caring for those that need it, open markets and ideas. And I have to say, in 71 episodes, man, it seems to be the underlying philosophy, belief, and drive behind most people's idea of social change, man. You know, that's kind of uplifting for me, you know. But how could parents be more involved without becoming those parents, right? You know, those parents that are so down the throat of the school that you become so annoying, you know, that people don't want to deal with you, yeah. Right? And then there's those that are just completely hands-on. So for the parents out there, other than what you've already dropped, you know, being able to talk to your kids, open, enforce beliefs. I mean, come on. In 30 minutes, we dropped some pretty decent advice. But how could parents become more involved in, say, the school without maybe you know, with the child, with their child in the school itself, you know what I mean? Without maybe having to be a part of PTA per se or wrapped in, what would you suggest?
Just be a parent. Build a relationship with your kid. And I know that sounds pretty simple, but study your kid. Like, study him. Understand how your kid thinks. Understand how your kid learns. Understand what makes your kid tick. Know their personality, understand what they like, and, you know, just support whatever it is they like. Like, well, growing up, when I was young, like young, you know, before my dad had turned for the left, the most secure moments I had was knowing that when we woke up on a Saturday, that my dad was going to be like, that my dad was going to take us to the pool. And then once he take us to the pool, we barbecuing at the pool and we swimming in the pool and he'll hop in the pool and play with us. That's amazing, you know. But parents, they get to a point to where they stop doing that stuff with their kids. You know, take your kid bowling. Show the kid that you're still a kid inside. Show the kid that you know how to have fun. Show your children that you laugh. Show your children that you care. Show your children, like, make yourself vulnerable to your children. You know, if they do something, make sure you help them understand that you're upset at the situation and not them. You know, and really just spend quality time with them.
Define quality time, because that has a loose and vague definition, right? Really.
So quality time.
Is quality time on the iPad together?
No, quality is, well, time is an acronym. Time is an acronym for tools, information, material, and energy. So whatever tools you had, so as an adult, if you're a man, all the tools that you did to attract the mother of that child, use those same tools to invest into that kid. And then the information that you had growing up that's been passed down to you, always teach a kid something. It's easier to build relationships when you teach a kid something about life, something that they know that they can go use instantly, because you're gonna build credibility instantly with that kid. And then, you know, the more you teach that kid something, or the more you teach your child something, the more they're going to keep coming back to you, and the more they're going to trust you. Now, in the low poverty areas, this is what I see. Parents, they don't, for lack of better words, they do what they don't like. It's whenever they don't feel like doing something, because love is a discipline. It doesn't matter if you feel like it or not. Do it, because that's what your kid is asking you. Because that's what your kid needs. You get those. You get these parents who. You get some of these phenomenal parents who, you know, they work in 16-hour days, but they're tired and they just want to go home and go to sleep. But they still spend those 2 hours with their kids. They still go outside and throw the football or go swimming or still go to their volleyball games or go to their track meet. And they're tired. Like, they're deadbeat tired.
Yeah.
But they don't do things because they don't feel like it. They do things because they know that that's how their kid know they love them. So there's going to be that barrier of being selfish or being selfless. And most parents that I see in the community that I work, and these kids aren't being parented, it's because they're selfish and they don't care and they're lazy. So when you get a lazy parent, then your offspring is going to follow suit.
See the parent, see the child.
Right. So
when you talked about quality time, and I think just to define that further, I love how you use the acronym. Time, information,
tools, information,
or tools, information,
material, and energy.
Right.
So if you're not.
So would you consider quality time just letting as free time for the child? Would you call it quality time to where you get to be the cool parent and sit there and watch some cartoon for 2 hours? Or I don't know. I think the tone of my voice is putting too much bias in the question already. But outside of my tone giving away my view. Go further into the quality time from the time acronym. What would really define, actual quality moments per se is quality time just letting them go, letting them do whatever they want, and you participate in that with them freely? Is would that be considered?
Well, as long as your participation is interaction with them, yeah. But if you just throw your kid to a video game and you walk off and you do whatever you want, no.
But what about sitting on the couch with them as they watch Dora the Explorer?
As long as you ask them questions and interact with them with the TV, then yes. But if you just sitting back and you fall asleep and she's watching Dora to Explore by herself, then no.
I got you. So really the level of interaction, teaching something.
Right.
Is really what considered, the quality time together. And a lot of times, in this society, it's hard to bring that. And I know a lot of parents walk around with the guilt feeling, that, it's tough, to try to make incomes meet even at a blue collar level these days, not to mention low socioeconomic status in the schools you're in. Drugs are everywhere. It doesn't matter the socioeconomic status. It's infected at one end as much as it is on the other. So you have to factor in all these ideas or all these factors that parents are working with. Time does become the most valuable currency, really, above the money. I write that in my book, actually, is I believe that to be. It is experience and time, and sharing that in a quality manner. And I know a lot of those parents out there that feel that guilt, because they're gone, 50 hours a week, or maybe they're just substituting it with YMCA this, karate that, and they put them on these high tech schedules of, $500 a week. They're at 6-7 different classes, right? And maybe that's how they're showing. Going, well, I'm paying for all this stuff. So because I got you the stuff, so I'm not here. This stuff replacement or activity replacement is not the same.
No. Time is life's currency. And you're supposed to pour into your children. Whatever time you have, pour into them. So whatever the parents aren't pouring into them, I take my time and I pour into them. Because if I don't pour into them and nobody else pours into them, then... Imagine and Ms. Bond in her class. I'm gonna go ahead and probably shouldn't be saying this, but it's so fun. It's okay. It'll work.
We gotta have Ms. Bond on here, man.
Yes, yeah, so we're gonna get on here. It's gonna have to be on a Saturday or something.
That's fine.
Come through. Because Monday through Friday she's sure. In school. But
you sure she's not in her like Superwoman, Batwoman cave somewhere on the weekends, like. saving cities and saving neighborhoods.
She says she is not leaving Evans. I said, if we can duplicate you, we definitely would. But she said she's not leaving Evans. She said, nope, I'm staying right here. She said, I love the kids. I don't like to deal with the parents. I don't like to deal with adults. I just love the kids.
You know what we should do? Before you get back to your example in the classroom, we should go out and do a live podcast from Evans High School. And interview her on campus and broadcast live.
I don't think she would go for that.
No? Why not?
Because when you start talking about kids, it's a passionate moment. And
yeah,
and I don't think she wants. She don't. She doesn't. She's not. She's pretty private. Mm. She doesn't want. I mean, she. You'll know that she's passionate, especially based off of work.
That's all right. I'll get her on the podcast.
But we don't. But I don't think, because if she start, like, if she cry, the whole school will cry. If she cry.
Mm-hmm.
So if she starts tearing up the whole school,
yeah, well,
because she shows everybody that love.
Who couldn't use that kind of love touch on a school day?
Well, we'll see.
Let Miss Bond talk to me for a minute. I'll curb it into going to where she'll have to. If she denies it, it'll be denying the use of her energy.
No, she's very good at deflecting energy off of her. Now, like she's not going
like you like, are.
Sometimes, but yeah. she's a professional at it. Like, you're not getting ready to tell Miss Bond how great she is. She's gonna act like you never even said it.
No, I wouldn't do it. Oh, I'm telling you.
I
pull out all the stops. So you gotta have integrity when you're trying to convince somebody to do something.
Just know it's gonna take. Just know, be ready for the challenge, because Miss Bond is pretty good. I mean, look.
No, I would love to talk to her. So tell me about this awesome. This.
All right. So the example that she gave was it was a balloon. And it was about your personal bank account, and with your personal bank account, you know, she not, it wasn't a balloon, it was a beach ball. She blew this beach ball up, and she said, all right, so start telling me. So she told the class, well, name me some negative things. So they started saying some negative things, and she started taking air out of the balloon. She said, now what are some things that would be withdrawals? And everything that somebody said that was a withdrawal, she just took a little more air out of the balloon. I mean, out of the beach ball.
When you say withdrawal.
Withdrawal. So, like, you know.
Negative. Something negative.
Right. So stuff that's going to take out of you.
Gotcha. Yeah, I figured. I was just clear.
Yeah. So the balloon, I mean, so the beach ball got flat enough to where she threw it on the ground. She said, well, have you noticed it stopped working? Like, the beach ball, the job of a beach ball is to bounce. And it's not bouncing back. It's just staying there. Now, does it mean that that's all the beach ball is going to do, is just sit there? Or what is it going to take for this beach ball to get lively again? And then the student started saying, listening to positive music. So she started blowing a little more air in it. Positive affirmations. She started blowing a little more air in it. People to care about you and a little more. So, you know, it just came to realizing that if you want to be happy and with your personal bank account, you got to make sure you're around people who are going to keep investing into you and being positive. And although you may be the one who's so hard on yourself and deflating yourself, that you have somebody or you have a team around you that's going to keep pouring into you to where you're not going to find yourself deflated or defeated. You'll still keep enough air to where you can bounce back from everything that you feel like you're getting ready to go through. And I found that was amazing. I think that was symbolic to a lot of people who are in debt as far as their personal bank account.
Can I add to her metaphor?
Go for it.
All I started was envisioning, though. But if you keep filling it up with all that hot air, it's good. But you need the humility to balance it out. And I'm trying to play both sides. But you need the humility to balance it out, because if you don't, you overfill. And your head will pop. And then you fly all over the damn room or two. One of those two things. If you fill yourself up with too much pride and arrogance, all you're done. You know, so it's, she can, you know, further that stuff. Trying to find that balance, man. And, you know, I wanted to, as you were talking, I was imagining the balloon going up and a kid trying to envision that, you know, of trying to learn to speak positive, especially if the environment at home is speaking negative on all fronts, right? That's where they're learning to talk to themselves. The inner dialogue, or that child's narrative of their life, you know, has been shaped by how their parent shapes their life. And I think parents forget that. And a lot of times they're at home. You know, we do it sometimes where you may be negative about the world or an impact or something like that, a cause even a person, someone they don't even know, someone at your job. And the kid is learning. The kid learns and they absorb. They go, okay. That's how I respond when the world doesn't go how I want it to. All right, this is how we resolve those issues, right? That's where they get the imprint. But I couldn't help when you talked about kids not having really anyone to talk to objectively. I talked about the counselor route. What does a kid do that may be that beach ball on the ground? You know, what are the steps? at a school? What does the school provide? What is, if not, right? We would assume the parents, right? You'd want to talk to the parents, but let's say that's just not going to happen for some reason. What steps does a kid take to, I don't know, find help or do that within the school system?
It just depends on if they're aware of what their options are. You know, at Evans, it's a different ball game because they have so much support. You know, you have Elevate. There's a lot of programs. You have Elevate. You have City Year, and they're more like Elevate is more mentors. It's more mentorship program. It's more of a mentorship program than anything. So if they can't get into Elevate, and then you have City Year. Now City Year, it's a company to where it's a bunch of students. Now they're already they're college students, and some of them they just graduate high school. But you know you got to be like 18 and older to go. But City Year, your job is to go in and tutor the kids on whatever it is from whatever standpoint they are, and help them pull their grades up. So they're inside the classroom tutoring, and then they stay after school tutoring. So they're more like teacher's assistants. And not only are they teacher's assistants, but even after they leave out of the classroom, once school is over, they still stay after school for a few extra hours tutoring kids. So City Year, they're more like mentors and tutors too. And AmeriCorps does the same thing. Now these are just at Evans and a few other schools. So I don't know what they have nationwide.
Sure.
But you know, I know City Year is nationwide.
Those seem to be academically involved. Where does a kid go that may be emotionally, you know, experiencing things in life? You know what I mean? Where do they go? It seems that there definitely seems to be a lot of programs for academic help, for sure, because let's face it, that makes the FCAT scores or whatever this new test is now. It makes all the new scores better, makes the school grade better. So it seems to be a lot of influence in helping the grade. I'm all for that. But the grades, I think, are also more of a symptom to where if the grades are bad, I'm going to say that there's probably a symptomatic something happening. You know, so how does the school provide, or do they provide a way for a kid to find release that way? Or help that way?
There's no one how.
I like kind of how you said that. There's no one how.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
So as far as the parents go, like, it's parents, man.
No parents included. We said because a lot of these kids don't have the parents, and let's face it, a lot of parents don't have the principals.
But it's, you can't.
I walked into that on purpose because the truth is what I don't know. You would know, but I don't think there is any way that they can go. And you mentioned it. The teacher has to be not only the parent, not only the teacher, but also the therapist and the counselor. You can't do that. That's so biased. And so this one would explain why teachers struggle in and out of what to do, because that's three roles you got to play that are impossible. And truthfully, right? You can't be the parent and the teacher, if you will. You can. There's homeschooling, so that happens, but it's difficult. So then you throw in the other mix that you also have to be the counselor, the person that they can talk to. Yes, you can, to limits. You know, with parents, depends. But my point is, there's so much given to grade performance to the kids that, you know, is there any way, you know, it's people like you, really, you're the go-to. It's the youths that work in these schools, man, that really seem to be the only outlet left for these kids to go, guess what my life is like? Instead of going, yeah, I couldn't do homework last night because, well, I slept in the porch. You know what I mean?
So that, guess who fault that is? Like, the school can only do so much.
Right.
But if parents just became aware of, if you can just do something, is make sure that your kid sees you every day. Feed your kid in the morning. Feed your kid at night.
You know how many, was it 1 out of 5 go to school with no food? I think that's somebody have to double check me. But when you say that, people may laugh, but think about that. You know, for a moment, you know what I mean? Like, what? I mean, it sounds simple, right? Feed your kid or provide that, right? Or teach them how to feed, right? I kind of like that idea. Teach them how to feed, because a lot of people are just providing the food, and what's being provided is killing them.
Right.
You know, so I like the idea of teach them how to eat. I do say in the book also that one of the most important roles as a parent, if not anything earthly, if you will, nothing above earthly responsibility, in my opinion, as a parent, than to teach how to eat, what to eat, and how to stay healthy. I mean, that stops harm. That stops hurt, pain, harm in a lifetime. So above that, there's nothing else, you know. So I went on a ADHD caffeine-induced tangent.
No worries.
That's what, you know, that's what I do, though. You're always prepared for that. Somewhere in there was a guy back to a question, right?
As far as the parents.
We keep going back.
Because it's, man, all right, no names.
Thank you for the reminder.
I used to coach Pop Warner football. And when I was coaching this year, I ended up having to quit.
Don't even use the league.
I quit coaching. So I was coaching this team. I can't say the team.
Yeah, don't say the team, the league, nothing.
So I was coaching this team, and the father of one of the kids ended up saying, "You'll never be a man unless you go to jail."
What?
And I almost fought him. So, you know.
What?
So it didn't go so great. I ended up seeing him. I ended up seeing him Tuesday. So I ended up seeing the kid, got goals in his mouth. He's in and out of juvenile detention center. And
shout out to those that have gold in your mouth that aren't doing that.
He was 12. He's 16 now. So he's 16. That was 4 years ago. Yeah, it was about 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago.
And has he been made a man yet?
He's been in and out of Department of Juvenile Detention Center like week in and week out.
Yeah, so how's that worked out?
Well, I mean,
yeah.
It's the parent. Fuck. So the parent kind of
how do you not go home?
Situation.
How do you not chase him home, man?
I got to stay in my lane.
Yeah, you have discipline out this world. Yeah,
right.
Never
so,
mind.
You know, I understand that. I understand that there's order, and you know, he's not my offspring. But I told him, I said, look, now when I like sweetheart, like good kid, very respectful, listens. Nobody has problems out of this kid. It's just his parents stuck him in a situation. That's more like drug, like it's pertaining to like he got to sell drugs and he got to do all this stuff.
It's passed down too.
So you're looking like,
dude, the same way that parents in many neighborhoods pass down lawn businesses and insurance businesses alike, they pass down those businesses too.
Yeah. So and he was forced into it, and he has a brother. Now his brother's been shot. Now these are the kids that I'm not, you know, so I told him, I said, look, man, I said, when you get your schedule, cause I saw him a month before. I said, man, what's up, man? Why you here? And you know, he had a government issued bracelet on his ankle.
Yeah. The house arrest.
Yeah. So one of the teachers told me this, and I just told him that I don't know anything about dress code. I'm just going to go to class. And he just keep breaking probation because, you know.
Well, how many times, though, do you see in the school, though? I was speaking in a school a little while ago, and I noticed a member of the facility, I'm even going to stay that vague, respond to a child. I mean, that's what they are. They may think they're adults or act like it, and many of them can really respond like it. So, but responded in a very... what's up kind of way, like I'll take you to war, you know, let's clash egos right now. And it was in front of like 30-40 kids all at once. I was on stage, you know what I mean, on front, and I'm like, I just kind of saw that, and I wondered, you know, how much of that plays into the problems that you see within teachers, administrators, etc. Is this, I am the discipline, I am the authority, so or else. You know, how much, you know, how often do you see that? Does it play into issues?
You don't really see it too often. But when you do see it, once again, I don't work for the school board.
Right. That's why I ask you. You can be open about it.
So since I don't work for the district, I kind of got to be on my P's and Q's. Like, there's still order of politics that I got to play, because if not, then, you know, they can sit back and say, Mike.
Yeah, yeah. And be careful, because this podcast will do that to you.
Right. So you know, so sometimes the staff can end up saying, or can end up feeling and being like, well, this particular staff member doesn't feel safe with you coming here anymore. And, you know, this is their work. So I'm with you. You can't come back.
Let's not scare all my other guests. Looking around, let's not scare everybody out. Now I have to defend it. There's other also, this podcast can help you out when you're getting your message out there, trying to do what you do, your research, etc., your books, your philosophies. It'll help you out. Sorry. It can also, you know, like any public speaking, though, but, you know, this podcast is no different than social media. No. You know, whatever you're going to post on Facebook or anything else, you know, this is going to come the same way, except you're going to reach now 110 countries, so it's a little bit larger net. You know,
yeah. But just in a nutshell, you kind of just gotta not deal with the authority figure who's out of line. You just kind of got to go back to the kid and just give a kid therapy by saying, hey, look, they're not right. You know, obviously all adults aren't right, right? And they can be like, yeah, well, you know what, you right on this one. They not right on this one. So don't even worry about it. Just be cool. And they be like, all right, and I don't, now look, now if you want me to sit down here with you, I'm going to sit down here with you, let them write this whole statement, and then you can tell them, if you go in this office with this dean, that you want me to go in the office with you, and I'll be your advocate.
Sounds like they need to use student boards and unions for more than just throwing homecoming.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know how there's unions at your job, to right. where you can go to your union leader and be like, look, man, you know, we're getting killed with this dress code here. You know what I mean? We've lost 5 kids to suspension last week, right? Let's come to a common ground here, right? I'm serious. So it sounds like there needs to be, like, take the board that everyone votes for at these schools, the president, the treasurer, vice president, and give them some real influence. Because, look, it seems to be a lot of boards and teachers and research people that seem to give advice to the kids for what they need. And we just covered about how nobody asks the kids what they need, right?
Right.
They should have a board that has some powerful say in their damn schools, to where they can go, listen, you're all supposedly doing this for us, right? Why don't you ask us what we need? What are we going through? You know, how can we use your adult powers? You know what I mean? You know, bring that together, dude. That'd be fucking cool.
It'll work.
I may have actually ran for something in high school if I knew it actually had more power than what the float colors were going to be.
Right. May implement that next year. I think we may implement that next year. Next year may work.
Yeah?
Yeah. So I think, because this
year. Didn't they used to have like a safe council or something?
Remember? They still do. They still have safe coordinators. But it's a safe coordinator.
Like, remember, there's a safe council where the kids sat with some sort of kid court and you could work out your problems if you brought it to them or something?
Oh, they call them mediation now.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. Soon there'll be trials.
Yeah, they have them, but they're not. They don't have that same structure.
Mm, right, to where it's really the kids' union. You know what I mean? Right. I wonder if the kids would really make it a popularity vote as much as they do. I don't know if they really still do, but if they made it a popularity vote, if they really knew that who they put in place was going to have some real constructive power, rather than whether they add vending machines or not. You know what I mean? Or whether the homecoming is at this gym or this hotel.
Well, those decisions are still, like, the bottom line is still the principal.
Yeah.
So it just depends on who the principal is at the school. That's going to determine if that's really functional or not.
Just like a fucking monarchy.
That's what it is. It's a dictatorship.
I was going to say it's a dictatorship.
It's a dictatorship. So sometimes it could work. Sometimes it can't work.
I don't know if that's even a good way to keep doing it, because we do it on a mass schedule, on a mass level in the country, right? Isn't it kind of weird that we all still believe in, like, a one leader kind of head ape, as Joe Rogan may say? I can't help but ponder it. And so when you look at a principal, you're like, this dude or girl or woman, sorry, is in charge and takes the fall for all the intricate parts of this place. That seems like a lot of stress to take on, and very difficult to make a true decision down the middle. You know, it seems like they really just want a fall person. You know, when you could really have I know they got the school board, but I mean, at the school, little mini boards, you know what I mean?
Well,
am I fixating?
They do have those. Like, it's like, the principal has a, what you call a council. They have their own people who they would go to for an advisory board.
Okay, is this like a thing or is it just an unsaid thing?
It's just an unsaid thing.
See, they should make that like a thing and put some students on it.
Here's the problem with that.
And put some U's on it, actually.
No, don't put me's on it.
That's why you're perfect for it. See, the person that should be president, this is what I think we should do for president. We should all have to take our turns like jury duty. You should get your call, and for this month, you're the president. And you have to deal with that stuff. It should be easy voting, none of this crazy enough. And, you know, at first, remember, the president title actually was given because it really didn't have a powerful meaning. That's why we chose the word president. Now we make it the leader of the most powerful whatever on earth, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I do. I think we should all have to take turns and be like, damn, I got president this month. Shit. You know what I mean? You get your shitty jury duty pay. You got to go make the tough decisions, but we all got to live with them.
But
you know?
It wouldn't work because...
No, the rich people don't get to stay rich that way.
They wouldn't. But also, sometimes there are implications that need to be made on a larger scale that would have to be, that would take, it would take 5 or 10 years for that plan to be executed. Like, I'm sure, and I don't do politics.
Yeah.
I don't see a reason for politics. And
how did I bring this here?
I don't know.
That's what I do. Sometimes I like to walk out in the middle of like live air land. I think it's the closest you can get until you're actually doing it, where you just float away in space, like, and you're just gone, right? Floating on live air, being comfortable without the ums.
Yeah, but in this case, it's difficult because some of the students aren't aware of what's best for them. So when you see some students just don't know what's best for them, then you kind of just gotta. You got to realize that the principal definitely knows the better situation because they just, you know, they've been in the school board and they understand how the system works. And I think dress code has always been great for schools for the simple fact that those kids who don't have or the parents who can't afford to have all these clothes, you know, the uniforms limit people to being able to separate themselves and separate the hierarchies of those who for those parents who can only buy 2 weeks worth of clothes for their kids versus those parents who can buy a month worth of clothes for their kids. Now,
definitely easier.
Right. So now kids aren't separated by their social construct of how much their parents make or how much their parents spend on.
They still find a way. You know, I've noticed by like little addition accessories that they can wear that they attach to it. And you know, they find their groups anyway, somehow, generally by where they live at too. You know, they find a way, and I don't know, I used to be pro-uniform than anti-uniform. It's just, I hate the idea of uniform, you know what I mean? It's just another way to try to box them into this, you know, shape, but there's a lot of good to it. Like you said, there's a lot of, it helps a lot of people. Shoot, even as a parent that can't afford it, and me, I thought, you know, as a student, I'm like, you mean I don't have to think about what I have to put on in the morning? You know, a lot of kids do that anyway, but, you know, I think it's, outside of the idea of uniform, it makes it so gross. You know what I mean? More the idea of, you know, something else to wear. I don't know. It definitely can have a lot of pros to it, too.
But think about it like this. What's his name? A lot of people just tend to wear the same thing every day. Most successful people, they wear the same black shirt, yeah, blue jeans every day.
Dude, that's the monkey suit, bro.
Because
aren't they weird? Sorry, I'm cut. Go ahead.
Because if you can limit what you have to think about, then you can still put more of your focus into what you want to do. So if kids didn't have to worry about, what am I going to wear? I got to make sure I put these shoes on. I'm going to kill them with this outfit. You know, if all they got to worry about is their socks and shoes, then change that up as much as you want, by all means. But at the end of the day, when you come to school, you'll focus more on what's important. Because right now, you still have kids who got cell phones inside the school. But cell phones become more of a distraction, and then you already got the wardrobe becoming a distraction. And
that's what I
got
to ask you: are cell phones rampant in the schools that you are in? And when I say rampant, are they used for classes?
They're not used for classes.
What?
They get laptops. Kids have laptops.
Okay, so they're handing them laptops there. So they're still virtual then.
Yeah. So there's no need for your phone.
See, at the school that my daughter attends, next year they're going fully virtual, mm-hmm. and she can't go to school without her phone. The classes, the apps, all through the phone. And I went, so one of the most difficult things for them to put down and ignore, you make also the learning device they have to stare at. I'm all for efficiency and learning. These are great ideas, but I have a difficulty when I was like, you know, she lost her phone once. Well, many times. But when I take the phone and it's, well, I got to go to school, I need my phone. I'm like, excuse me? No, and the phone did not go to school at all. Use a pen, use a paper, find another way. You know, but that notion, you know, and I like the laptop idea better.
Yeah. So they use laptops. So now some kids have two phones. You go, how do you get two phones? I make decent money and I can't afford two phones. Why you got two phones? You got two iPhones. Like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Or, you know, some kid. But I mean, either way, I just feel like we just have to change the way the kids think. If we create this paradigm shift to help them understand that what you wear doesn't create your value. It's what's on the inside. It's what you point to yourself, which is why I'm big on information. So that's why I'm always big on pointing to them and helping them understand that that the most important thing that I can do is invest in you enough to where you can apply the information that I've given you to where you know that nobody validates who you are. And a shirt doesn't validate who you are. A pair of jeans, shoes, the jewelry you wear, nothing validates who you are. What's in, like, your mind is what truly allows people to see the value of who you are based off what you pour out. So I like for them to think that they're this that they're a treasure chest. On the outside, you look at a treasure chest, it's not made of gold, it's made of wood. You know, you got this little padlock on it, and it's made of brass and wood, and you know, the wood isn't all the wood is all bent and warped and so forth, but inside it's full of treasure. And everybody wants to get in that treasure chest. So you just make sure that you just keep building your treasure chest and keep putting coins in you every day. When you come to school, your job is to put as many coins in you as possible so that people can start. So when you get in high school, so when you graduate college or graduate high school, then people will keep trying to raise their hand for the highest bid. Because they don't really know what's all in that treasure chest, but whatever it is, they know what's valuable. And that's how I want them to start thinking, because that's what interview is about. When somebody give you an interview, it's interview. They want to have a conversation with you and open you up and see what's inside of you. And they want to see what they can use that's inside of you. And that works. So when they start saying, okay, so he's disciplined. Oh, he shows up on time. Okay, so he's good with Microsoft Word. Okay, he can type 90 words a minute. Okay, he can manage. Good with time management? Great. So they look into you and see what they can cultivate, to see what they can bring out the best that's already in you. And that's what shows value. But, you know, as a culture, we tend to pour outside of ourselves. So we try to make our treasure chest look so nice, and there's nothing inside of it. And that's what kids got to catch the concept of, because if they knew what was really inside, that if they keep investing inside of them instead of outside and around them, that life would be so great. But once again, it goes back to the parents. The parents not teaching the kids who they are. So Miles Monroe, very powerful quote, when purpose is unknown, abuse is inevitable. If a kid doesn't understand who he is or what's his purpose or what's her purpose, then they're not going to be able to become productive. So you have so many people unproductive in society because they've been abusing their life this whole time. Like, they don't know the importance of reading. You ask, like, you tell a kid, look, man, you should read this. Why do I need to read? Well, because when you read, then you're going to put more coins in your treasure chest. And people are going to hire you because of the information that you gain from reading. Well, and, you know, the girls be like, well, I read novels, and between the novels, and I read Terry McMillan books, and I read all these books. Like, no. What do you think is going to happen when you're in class and you forget to read a chapter? And then it's time for you to do a quiz, or, you know, 30% of your grade is on this pop quiz or on this test. But yet you haven't learned how to learn because you haven't learned how to read. So, and you have to practice these things. Like, traits are developed, gifts and talents that you already have access to. You have to develop all these gifts and talents. All these gifts and talents you have, it's like the Power Rangers. Remember how you got the five Power Rangers, and you know, one was blue, one was pink, one was yellow, one was green, one was black, and then you end up having the white Power Ranger. Where when they all combine, so when all these specialties combined, they made this great massive machine that was able to conquer and take over the world and defeat and beat all these bad guys. Well, we all have those things. We all have greatness developed within us that we can pull from that. So, but we don't develop our greatness. We neglect our greatness by not building our foundation, which is reading, writing, and arithmetic. We don't focus on knowing how to communicate. We don't understand who we are. We study everything except for us. And from that, we don't know what we're compatible with. So we end up with this dead end job that we don't like. And we just feel like that there should be so much more to life, but we just haven't looked within ourselves. So just from all these things of not knowing how to read and not reading, then you would never get a chance to read, to know that there are people out there who are making bundles of money, but at the same time have tons of fun because they're doing what they were designed to do. And it's because you know who you are. And you ask a lot of kids, but who are you? Well, my name is John. All right. So who is John? Well, what does the name John mean? I don't know. All right, so John, so what's your personality traits? I don't know. So what are you compatible with? I don't know. I'm just going to go out here and get this engineering degree and go work. And then you see him 15 years later. So, John, how you like this engineering? How you like engineering? I hate it. Well, what do you mean you hate it? I mean, you make a lot of money? Yeah, but money doesn't mean anything to me anymore. Well, why not? I just don't like it. I just don't like the job. This isn't what I want to do. Well, you've went to school for it for 5 years, and you did. And so I've talked to you 15 years ago, and you've met your plan. You've done everything you want to do. So why aren't you happy? And the reality is John never poured into himself. He poured outside of himself. So he poured to do everything that the world wanted him to do instead of what was inside of him to do and designed to do to serve people using the gifts and talents that he should have developed from the inside so that the outside will end up looking great.
Agreed, man. I love the rampage, man. We're wrapping up, man. I try to keep these within the hour and change, man. I've gotten some requests. They're just too long sometimes. and you drop a lot, man. A lot there. You know, and your whole philosophy you kind of rehashed and reinforced, you know, about how to look at life or learning or education or pushing those dreams of people, you know, and to look inside ourselves even. And to try to open those things up. You know, I had a response of something I wanted to ask you. Wait for it. I do wonder that sometimes asking a child, really, at 17, going on to a young adult at 18, still a teen, mind you, to choose a life career path, to choose something long term. Now, some people just know, right? Some are, you know, blessed enough to feel that from a young age and pursue that any direction, be that college or anywhere else. But it just seems that when you go to college, generally the first 2 years anyway are core stuff. But even then, at 19, 20, to choose what you're going to really settle in. Now, it doesn't have to be the rest of your life, but it's pitched to you at that time what you're going to do with your life. Right. So they toil over the decision. It just seems like such a young age. Instead of saying, hey, focus on something you like to do, cultivate that, work that for a while, but you can always change.
Right.
You know? And I mean, what do you think about them at that age having to choose something such long term that's in debt is now committed almost with college now? You know, college path may be the way now. It may be obsolete in 20 years, but it is now, but that really now is just debt for most people.
Right. So what was your question?
at that age, do you think it's a little difficult or is it too much to ask them at that age, especially with poor parental guidance, to start choosing whether or not to add 30, 40, 20 grand in debt right away as they pursue college or something?
Yeah. I feel like their job should be, I feel like high school should just be the start. I feel like you shouldn't ask any kid what they want to be. 18, you're still a kid. once you get to 20, like, do 2 years. Just do 2 years. Just get your two-year degree and then just go work for a while. Figure out what you like and dislike. You know, go out and embrace the experience of the workforce for a little while. And who knows? Maybe you end up like I decided, and all, like, this workforce isn't for me. I don't like somebody telling me what to do. I'm not real fond of this. I'd rather go out and learn how to fish and struggle my first 5 years learning how to fish and getting these little tadpole fishes and, you know, and eating little by little. But I know the better I become, like, the stronger I become as a fisher, when these big fish start coming in, I start getting little small dolphins and I start going to these sharks. When I start eating pretty good, it's going to be because I've learned how to eat on my own. So I feel like every kid should at least do 2 years of college and then just hop out in the workforce and find out what it is they like, because they haven't really experienced enough to understand to know what they like and what they don't like. But I think they should have a class called Inner Self, to where you start to study and understand who you are as a person. And I don't mean just, you know how they give the personalities traits. Like, it's more than just a personality traits, like your name.
Not the theoretical aspect of personality, a real get inside yourself self-awareness class, right? Not just the theory or notion of, say, Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Right. So exactly. Self-awareness. So once you become aware of self, then you can learn your limits. You can learn what you like and what you don't like and who you are. And I mean, you know, your name means a lot. Your birthday means a lot. And then even the gifts and talents that you have naturally. Excuse me. Even the gifts and talents that you have naturally mean a lot. Because here I am, because I'm one of those kids where I thought I was going to be this great engineer. And just coming from the idea of being an engineer, the reality was I can be a great engineer, but I'm a phenomenal speaker. I know how to convey messages. You know, I'm a teacher. So when I learn things, I break things down to where, because when you teach, your job is to eat so much, like a bird. You know, a bird will go out, grab this worm or grab this fish, eat this fish, come back and regurgitate small pieces at a time for its offspring to eat. And you only feed it as much as it can take. And then you sit back, let them digest it. And then when they're ready for a little more, you give them a little more.
That's the most disgusting, awesome metaphor I've heard.
Well, it's birds. And that's what
it's vomit.
No, it's not.
I'm just fucking around. I'm like, that's cool and gross at the same time. But it reminds me of a comedian's little tagline at the end, to where he'll pause on a joke or something and go, "I'll feed you baby birds." And then he'll wait. You know what I mean? I've said that in a couple of speeches before when I'm talking. I've been in the middle and stopped. And I'll feed you. You know, then I'll switch it later and be like, "Feed me." You know, they'll feed me back. But yeah, you do work like that. You're definitely meticulous and disciplined in how you apply your own principles to your own life even. And, you know, Brett Richard down in Naples for Fit Project Radio, show I was just on down there with ESPN, etc. The show we're actually starting up here in Orlando. I'll be anchoring. I had a connection, something, and he said, feeding them a little bit, holding back, Alfie, waiting a little bit. I can't remember. Damn it. Brett, you dropped too much good advice this weekend hanging out with you, man. It all got confused. But, oh, well. It's about feeding and giving some information. Bring me back, Mike.
All right, so
you were talking about feeding your message.
Yeah, just making sure that you just feed them just enough that they can handle. And then once they're done, then you feed them some more. But the goal behind what I'm great at doing is I can break down information because I know who I am now. So once you know who you are, you know, like, it doesn't take a college degree for anybody to validate who you are.
Discipline. Right. Brett was talking about discipline and fighting on the weaknesses and et cetera. That's it. Thank you. You bring me right back, man. Yeah, and I cut you midstream, man, so I'm going to see if I can rev you back up. But he talked about the discipline and living by the principles and recognizing the weaknesses in what we do and what we show. You know what I mean? Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you. I can think beyond 3 seconds now.
Oh, you do pretty good. Yes, but that's just what it boils down to. Some people are very good with their hands. My little brother Travis, he's not my biological little brother, but we've been brothers. We went through some tough times together, and genius can't convey it, but he can teach you anything with his hands.
My cousin Dar Lowry is that way.
Yeah, so you know,
you
so
hand him some math books or whatever, no interest, no interest, and neither was I, but for the most part. But this guy, he used to take a PlayStation apart that didn't work and put it back together and work. You know what I mean? The guy could, he could teach you anything if it meant mechanic. If it meant mechanical, application, hands, memory, etc. I mean, he's a hell of a golfer too. You know what I mean? So like, yeah, there's, so you're talking about a learning language.
I love language. I mean, yeah, learning language. So Travis was a genius, man. Real genius. He would read and observe things and study things, but he was quick. He was quick on the draw as far as hands on. So, and you know, and he used to always call me the smart one out of us. But let's say we had to, because one of my friends, we went up to Atlanta and we hung out with her and her family, and it was wintertime, and they just bought this house, and in the backyard it was tons of trees and twigs that fell, and they're like, Mike, we just really want to get our backyard clean. And you know, it was like leaves and all that stuff fell. So you got leaves, old wood, and all the rest of the stuff all over the place. And now Travis always considered me to be the leader. But when it came down to that, I said, so Travis, what are we doing? Mike, this is what you do. You go over here, you grab this stuff, you put that stuff over there, you do that, and then we'll meet back up here. We'll switch all this stuff up. So, you know, I knew what his strengths were. So I just worked with him on his strengths. Now, his strengths weren't really the book smarts, but his strengths was the application of solutions. So so with him, it came down to he can put together anything if you just give him enough time to look at it. You can let him look at it, he'll be like, okay, I got it, come on. So this is what we're going to do. You do this, you do that, you do that, you do this. They'd be like, Mike, they'd be like, well, Travis, how'd you figure that out? Travis, like, look, man, this is what I do.
He recognizes patterns.
Right. So he knew that.
It's a valuable skill in consulting even.
Yes.
You bring a man like that into your business, let him look at your business and go, this is where you're fucking up.
Mm-hmm. So he was a visual learner. So he was a visual and hands-on learner. You talk to him, you show me. Then once you show him, I got it, come on. You show him once. But as far as audio, he wasn't really an audio learner. You know, he wasn't really one of those where he would just sit down and read and understand things like that. But as far as any construction work, like, you don't need an engineer. All you need is Travis to look at it. All right, so what's that? By 11, by 12? Okay, I got it. You can leave. We know what to do. They're like, that's it? Yep, that's all I need to do is see that. Hmm. And he'll put together some prices and be like, all right, so that's going to cost you this. This is going to cost you that. The cement going to cost you that. The drywall going to cost you that. We're going to need a little bit more drywall for that. All right, and look, we're going to need some extra paint. And look, we're going to need some stucco for this because we got to cover this up for that. And he'll throw all these calculations in his head and spit it right out to you. And you'll be like, what? Write it down. You write it down. I just said it. So then you write it down and he'll be like,
but if you had to explain to him what the job entailed and looked like, and he essentially, you're saying he couldn't use that same perceptive organizational pattern recognition. If you were standing there going, the room looks like this, it looks like that over here. If you're just trying to describe it, you're saying he'd be like, what would his response be?
He'd be like, show it to me. Like, okay. Draw it. And if you draw it, he has it. But if you don't draw it, you're like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, if it's just all words on a sheet of paper, mm-hmm. He's going to be like, well, wait, let me draw this out. Because he has to draw it out. Because, you know, and he has the same. I'm a visual learner. If you show me something, I got it. You're not getting ready to confuse me. Because once I got it, I got it. Remember that day when I was telling you, I said, look, I said, you remember the butterfly wings that you had on the elephant?
Yeah, yeah.
And you were like, Mike, I don't think. I said, no, it was definitely.
The color scheme that you remembered.
I said, the color scheme is definitely orange and brown. And you're like, Mike, I don't have that. It's nowhere on anything.
It was episode 41, the very first episode of the change, of our change of focus.
Right. And you were like, Mike, that wasn't one. I said, yes, it was. You're like, Mike, I can't find it. So I don't know where you hit it, but I saw it. And I know I saw it. You're not getting ready to confuse me. You're like, yeah, Mike, I don't have it. Yeah, whatever, man.
So that's saying that's your the idea also is if you see it, visual like your brother is.
Right.
So you're both being visual. And so what are the visual learning learning languages?
Audio, visual, and hands-on.
All right, audio, visual, and hands-on.
And a lot of times it's a combination of two. So me, you can show me something, I don't have to hear it. I'm 50% audio. I'm sorry, 50% visual, 50% hands-on.
So you, what you're saying is they can vary. So someone may be visual, like your brother and yourself.
Right.
But in some things, in some cases, they could, you and him could perform just as well with just audio. In some cases.
It depends, as long as we understand, as long as we understand the definitions of what you're putting out.
Yeah, because then we'd have to be able to measure the results of the task or the outcome, you know, because you know what I mean, right? We wouldn't know that unless you could. And there's so many varying tasks or events, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I can see why that plays a big issue in the schools of trying to apply that when there's possibly so many varying learning styles mixed with the three roles the teacher's playing,
right,
mixed with all the personalities and problems of each student in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you really look at a school or that application of school as we know it today, when you zoom in on it, man, like we've been doing for basically all of your episodes, it gets so almost complicated, ugly, to where you're like, look at it's so fucked up. You know what I mean? It's hard not to be like, can we just start over? You know, can everyone go home for the summer? No summer school, and let's just redo this. You know what I mean? And start, scratch this shit, scrap it. You know, I know they're trying with charter schools, but even they have their issues.
Yeah, charter schools aren't really being as productive because the teachers aren't effective. Like, until teachers know how to control a classroom and build relationships with the students, for one, you can't manage anything you don't understand.
Including the student.
And that's it. So the students are the classroom. So if you don't understand the students, you can't manage a classroom.
Well, let's go further back to what we talked about. If students need to know themselves, take on the teachers that are yet to know themselves even, or
right,
to understand their own love or be able to care for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, how could someone, I don't know, I guess you can make them argue that they're trapped, don't have the money or the time, you know, but how does it seems like it'd be difficult if we can't care for ourselves, you know, to be able to care fully in our full power for others, especially
right,
kids.
And that's one of, that's why I'm so big on teacher support, because a lot of teachers, they don't know how to love themselves. Like, a lot of teachers don't know how to eat healthy, because the cleaner you eat, the less stress you're going to have.
And they're sacrificers, if you will, by nature, right? Mm-hmm. Teachers can be nurturers. They can be the martyrs very easily. So they have this teaching heart anyway. So they a lot can sacrifice that extra time for themselves, you know, for others, and find a way to be the martyr end of it. But what you're saying is it's equally as important to those you're helping is to balance that time caring and loving yourself.
Yes, you have to love yourself in order for you to love somebody else.
Yeah.
Because if not, then your love is going to run out so fast, because your longevity is going to be at a minimum. You may be able to pour everything that you have into the kid. It's like a glass. Like, you know, let's say we fill this glass up. You fill this glass up, and then you go to work the next day, and the glass is a third full. And then you go to work the next day, and it's only a half full. Then you go to work the next day, and it's a quarter full. And then once you're done, there's nothing left. So by Thursday, there's nothing left. So Friday, here you are stressed out because you're dealing with trying to be a parent for some of these kids. You see these kids coming in hungry, wearing the same clothes. These kids got all these issues, and you have to see them every day. And you got kids coming in sleeping in your classroom, and you don't want to be the one to try to make it seem like everybody in your class should be paying attention, or you don't want to show this kid favoritism. But at the same time, you know, this kid has had to walk around at night because he didn't have a place to sleep. So here he is coming in second and third period, or coming in first period just to lay down and go to sleep in your classroom. And it's going to take him two or three periods just so he can have enough sleep to where he can function. So, because kids don't come to school ready to learn.
You know, that's going to bridge to the last two questions, man, and these rampages to take us out, man. I'm trying to structure it to be one simple question instead of my tangential long questions that seem to never pop out correctly. If you had to give, you know, advice for, because you talk a lot about principles, but you also talk when you give your speeches, I know when you're talking, that you don't just like to motivate people, give them inspiration, and send them on their way. You like to teach principles,
right,
and send them home with. And so other than what we talked about, you know, the care, which we know is needed and necessary to care, what advice would you give the parent And then what advice would you give the kid if there's, I don't know, an issue between the two of them?
The first one I would give, the parent is learn how to love yourself.
How can they do that? Be specific for me. How can they begin to do that?
Well, all right, I'll give me as an example. I'm an offspring of two parents who came from single family households. My dad never really had a dad or a mom in his life because, I mean, he had a female in the house that was considered his mother, but she never knew how to be a mother. You know, she wasn't the parent to give him a hug and tell him she loved him or tell him that she's proud of him. She never did that. So he never had a mother figure in the household, and his dad was living with a whole other family. And my mom, her mom was there, showed her love, but didn't teach her how to. But my mom was spoiled, so never really told a word no. Everything she wanted, she got, and she didn't, you know, kind of throw a tantrum. So she never knew what it was to be a woman, and she had a hard time developing as an adult, or even when she had us, she grew up with us. So I was aware of that. And the kid has to be aware of that because they just have to know that although the parents may bring this stigma like, I know all and I'm right all the time, you wrong all the time, so just listen to me, I'm right, I got it all figured out. You got to realize that they've been lying to you. They don't have it all figured out.
And they know.
Right. So just understand that your parents are making mistakes because nobody ever taught them. But they're just telling you that they have it all just so that you don't argue with them. Because if you start throwing questions at them, they're going to question themselves. They're like, maybe I don't know what I'm doing. So it just goes to making sure that the mother knows how to love herself enough and know the situation she in and be aware that she's in a curse, that she's in this generational cycle that her kid is going to have to pay the debt for if she don't stop it or he don't stop it.
So and what then, you're saying is really, you've answered both actually, which is the parent needs to be in the kid's shoes and the kid needs to be in the parent's shoes and try to feel that, try to be that perception or understand it.
Well, for the first part, yes. But the parent, like, you know, it's because what you asked me is like a 5-part question. I'm going to try to keep it 3 parts though. So once the parent is aware of what the generational cycle that she's in and to know to stop it. So stop it. And then, become more disciplined. First, study the word love. Know that love is to understand, submit, and obey. It has nothing to do with your emotions. It doesn't matter what you feel like doing. If you don't feel like listening, if you don't feel like going to the school, that's not the kid's problem. That's your problem. Whether you feel like it or not, you need to do it. So it's a level of discipline that's been missing. But that's personal development. So the parent must know that they're going to need some personal development. And then the kid has to be aware that the parent needs personal development. So the parent is handicapped mentally on a lot of areas in life and they don't have them all figured out. And it's okay for the parent to make and the kid must be aware that the parent is going to try not to show a vulnerable side, although they should, just to show that the kid is aware and the parent is on the same page. But instead, parents try to be so tough and try to act like they know so much. And not really perceive themselves. So parents kind of act like teachers in a lot of ways. The kid just has to be aware that the parents don't know it all, and that they're not the situation, and they shouldn't base their value off the situation that they're in, or how their parents treat them, or the clothes they wear, or the grades they make, because that's not who they are. And they shouldn't build it, like T.D. Jakes says, don't build a house where a tent belongs. Don't settle for letting this be your permanent destination. This is just only a part of your journey. And you're going to flourish past this. Or you have the choice to flourish past this. And if you choose to go past this, this is what's going to take. It's going to take for you to get through your education. It's at least get your high school diploma and do 2 years in college. And that'll give you enough information where you've learned how to learn, you learn how to think, you've learned how to do research, and you've learned how to teach. And you can start your own business by teaching people what you once didn't know. But when you do that, make sure you don't forget where you come from and remind your parents where they came from. Because that's what most adults forget. You know, we forget that, you know, we was out there, we were hot in the pants at one point, and we was out there dancing and shaking our butt and drinking and doing all this other stuff, and we forgot where we come from. We forgot that at one point we didn't want to listen to it, or we forgot that sometimes we just want somebody to listen to us. So that's what I would say for the kid and for the parent. But, you know, just both of them need to study love, because, you know, until you know what love is, you don't know if you really have it.
Man, where can everybody find you, man?
Oh, man. My email address is bberrynow@gmail.com. You can reach out to me there.
I'm on. You just put your email. Okay.
Oh, that's fine. You can also catch me on Instagram at Big Mike the Messenger. You can find me on Facebook at Michael S. Williams. You type in Orlando, Michael S. Williams, Orlando, you will find me. I have two pages. One is the Bberry by Michael S. Williams. I think that's everything. I don't think I have too many social sites.
Look, man, they have no problem finding you on my site, man.
Oh yeah, and definitely you can catch me on the Cognitive Ram page with Adam Laurie.
They love you, man. They love you. They love what you do, man. I love you. Thanks for doing this, man.
Look, man, you pull so much out of me sometimes, I couldn't do it without you, because I don't just talk.
I got to admit, sometimes it's like the sword and the stone here with you. And sometimes I get there. And to let everybody know, I'm going to go ahead and put it on Front Street. For the last two episodes, now a third, I have failed at getting to the parents, the brother, the back-end seated relationship of what built all of what Big Mike the Messenger is. And you skip it very lightly and quickly change routes. So one of these podcasts, y'all, I'm going to get him to talk about where he really comes from, what he's experienced, and share that perception. But I appreciate you sharing all your views and perceptions now, man, for these kids and what you do, man.
Definitely, man. It's what's needed. And, you know, honestly, I don't even know if you aware, but for your name to be Adam, Adam means the first to go. It means to start.
Oh, whew. I thought I meant like the first to go. Jesus.
No, like, you know.
I'm done.
You remember like the chess set that you told me that you had a vision about?
My dream?
Yeah, like in your dream, you said you was right in front of the king?
Mm-mm. Well, yeah, I was the pawn king. I was not the king. I was the first play pawn.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
and the first move in the dream.
So that's part of your purpose is you are the starter. So when you're the starter, and then if you look at a car, you have a battery, you have a starter, and then the starter charges the alternator, and once the alternator gets going, the alternator keeps everything else moving.
That's like you.
Well, I guess
I'm the starter, you're the alternator, we're gonna keep going with the engine metaphor.
Exactly. So that's
my point is you're the engine, man, for a lot of unspoken kids out there, man, that don't have the voice. And if people could only know what that head up there is probably managing on so many teenage lives, it would probably make most of us get pretty angry, you know? So thank you to all the kids that forgot or don't say thank you enough or don't realize they need to say thank you.
Oh, man, they give me hugs all day. When I'm in the schools, I get so many hugs, man. And I know the storyline, so I know what's behind this story. So everybody has a story. And It's knowing how to tell your story enough to where they'd be willing to tell you their story. And once they tell you their story and they know that you understand and they see you get upset and they see the tears in your eyes and they see how you don't want to say anything, they know you get it. And sometimes they be hugging you not for them, but they be hugging you because they feel like you need it. So it's fulfillment. So it's purpose.
And, you know, take us out of here on your tagline, man, before I do the outro here, bro. Take us out of here.
All right. So my tagline that I always have is, let's build heaven on earth, but it's going to, only thing it takes is love. So as long as you have love and you pour love out and you apply love, people don't fail. Well, love doesn't fail. People fail to love. So let's just make sure that we love each other so much that we build heaven on earth.
That's a beautiful thing, bro. That's a beautiful thing. So I appreciate you doing this, man. Love the heck out of you, bro.
Love you too, man.
So, you know, everybody, if we could learn to, I don't know, it seems like be vulnerable in what we do in our lives, that maybe as parents or not parents, but I'll speak as parents for this one, that, you know, those of you that have parents that you talk to, or those of you that are parents, I'll use a metaphor that I use in my book, actually. You know, if you're struggling with that relationship there, and perhaps you could be enforcing your own beliefs onto your parents, or because they enforce them to you, you're enforcing them on yours. And remember that what we believe merely are perceptions. And if we're not willing to be vulnerable with the ones we love, our kids, or even our parents possibly, that we can never change that perception. So, you know, I want you to imagine for a second if in your neighborhood, the thing to do every night was to walk around the neighborhood with your parents and the kids, right? That maybe that's just what everybody did. But your mom or your dad, well, they were paralyzed. Not by any choice of their own, just they happened to be. From the waist down, and they really couldn't go on those walks with you. Would you be mad at them? Would you be angry that they couldn't do that with you? I'd like to think not. So if you can imagine that, you know, like Mike said, that they're handicapped too, and what they know is what they know. But also be vulnerable and humble enough to know that what you know is what you know, and what you don't know, you should definitely know you don't know. So if we can bring that vulnerability to reality and shape a perception of willingness, openness, love, and caring like we talked about, then maybe we can change the world's perceptions, or even our kids or our parents. But it starts with changing your own perception. I hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living your cognitive rampage. The book is out right now on the limited edition. It's available at cognitiverampage.com or Adam Lowry, LOWERY.com. The limited editions are only going to run for another week. We may make it another 3 or 4 days till we sell out, truthfully. But the white edition is there. Purchase that while it lasts. It comes with a $250 thank you from me, a chance to be on the podcast, and a couple other personal things included, the all-white look as well with the white edition. But April 13th, the all-black edition drops everywhere online, Amazon, the Kindle version, and a few New York and Florida bookstores as well. But be on the lookout for that. We are going on tour April 18th. It is now official. And we will not be going to L.A. We will be driving from Orlando to New York in 10 days, hitting 10 different states and 20 different major universities between here and New York. So we'll be putting out the list of those colleges here coming shortly, but we are taking the Cognitive Rampage on tour. We are filming for the documentary Chemical Incarceration, because we're also going to wellness centers and rehabs along the way. But I'll be speaking at colleges, impromptu places, doing therapy on stage, if you will. I'm going to be doing a lot of different things from here to there, and podcasting with people from the universities, professors, and different specialties at each college. But the universities are hubs of knowledge, and that's what we're going to stick to as our trail to go up to New York for 10 days, promoting the book and, you know, a lot of other things. But it'll be fun. If you're along the way or along the path from Orlando to New York and you want us to stop by, the whole Cognitive Rampage, what we're calling the Cognitive Caravan, we will swing by. We'll do a podcast with you maybe. We'll definitely come on your show. We'll help you promote what you're doing. Just let us know if you're on that path. So, yeah, like I said, I love you. It's powerful to be vulnerable. Change your perceptions to change the world, and you can change yourself. I hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living your cognitive rampage. Love you.